I think if we're past our 10 o'clock, then I'll state my normal behavior. Turn off cell phones. Let's see if mine's off. But I'd like the committee to come to order, and we have a quorum. So let's see if who might have read the minutes. Who would like to move the minutes this morning? Representative Ruth moves the minutes for January 23rd. All in favor of the minutes, of adopting the minutes, say aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign? There you go. One of these days I'll learn to follow the script that staff sets for me. I'm going to pass the gavel because I guess I have the first bill today to Representative Norton.
Thank you. And the first bill we have before us this morning is before the committee is House File 132. Representative Mahoney is going to bring that forward. Go over there.
Yeah.
Representative Mahoney, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 132 and move it to State Gov Ops. I'd like to move it, the adopted and passed, on to State Government Operations, the Policy Committee.
Okay. Representative Mahoney moves House File 132 be recommended to pass and move to the State
Government Operations.
Government Ops. Okay.
At least that's the name I know it by.
GovOps Committee. And you have the bill before you. Representative Mahoney has an author's amendment, and it's labeled 132DE1. May I have a motion to put the bill in the form that the author wants?
I'd like to so move that, ma'am.
Representative Mahoney offers the author's amendment to House File 132, labeled 132DE1. Everybody, I think, has that before them. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I just have a question for Chair Mahoney. Wondering, for amendments going forward, going forward with amendments, maybe you covered this in the first committee hearing, and I'm just not remembering it. What does your expectations for amendments before they get to committee? Do you have a 24-hour rule, or do you have any?
I have a loose 24-hour rule. What I've said is that it would be nice for our committee. I'm asking that the committee members bring forth any substantial amendments 24 hours ahead of time. If there's some minor changes, verbiage, wording, that's not too extensive. I'm not going to say we can't do something like that in committee. We're trying to make a decent bill for one way or the other. But if it's a paragraph, a couple lines, we should probably have it so that the committee assistants can get copies and put them in the files beforehand.
Sure. Does that go for author's amendments as well?
Should, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Mahoney, could you perhaps briefly explain to the committee the delete everything, the changes that were, that you have presented?
Oh, no. Now they're asking me to do something.
Sorry about that.
And I have it here. Last year, the bill, as introduced, there's a few changes to it. What this delete all does is, I'll just explain the bill and then we can go right to it.
Okay.
The delete all amendment provides this framework for the biomedical industry research facilities at the university. It allows for remodeling of a building if it needs to be remodeled to be used as a research facility. It allows for the construction of up to 4 new buildings. For a total of 5 buildings in this particular authorization. Let's just start here. We have a $279 million bonding request. BioResearch is the building located on the University of Minnesota campus. Establishes a membership of authority for the release of funds to the U to start the building process. It puts into law the powers and duties of the building of the authority, the 13-member board. It lays out how the grant applications would be set for these buildings and when they would have what they would have to have in them, and in the grant application, and what would allow this authority to say yes to and pass it along. Gives them the power to authorize those grants up to 90% of the cost of the building. It sets out one of the interesting parts of it is that the institutions, any of the institutions that the university collaborates with have to, must annually generate at least $75 million in competitive federal grants, which is pretty impressive. And then it authorizes the commissioner to sell $279 million worth of state general obligation bond for the biomedical research facility.
Thank you, Representative.
In terms of changes, it's got some little tweaks that we put into it, took a few things out. I don't have the original bill in front of me right now to tell you the exact things that we took out of the first bill. But this bill went through 4 or 5 committees last year, and rather than go with engrossments, we just took the bill and put it into the order that came out of the 5 committees last year and put it into the delete all.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Does that help, Representative Pepin? I think that would help a little bit. Thank you. We do have the amendment on the floor. Is there any other further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion passes.
Madam Chair, I'd like to bring forth some of the testifiers. I brought
wonderful.
Today we have, I'm just kind of surprised that the university is able to run with all the people that they've got here, not only on the campus. We have the president of the university, we have the money guy, and we have the doctor. So why don't I bring them all up? Unless you have an order that you'd like to testify in?
I got the short straw.
You got the short straw. Well, take the seat right next to me, and I'm going to ask you to hear me while we're talking to me.
Before we get started, looks like we have a question. Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I'm scrambling to read through the delete all amendment and do side-by-side comparisons here, the first thing I'm noticing, Chair Mahoney, is the on line 123 on page 1, we've changed the Commissioner of Finance having authority over this to, I believe, the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development. And I'm sure there's a few other things in there. As this delete all amendment is being explained, we'd really appreciate if those differences could be pointed out and maybe the explanation and the rationale behind why we've done those changes. And I'll try to listen with one ear while I read with the other one while you're speaking.
From House Research, I'll just read it. The main change includes making the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development a member of the Research Facilities Authority rather than the Commissioner of Finance. And there's a couple of things, and I think that was suggested from the department. It also makes more sense to me than the Commissioner of Finance, because this is really an economic, the university should be considered an economic engine for the state. And the Commissioner of Deed is the state agency that tries to develop and encourage job growth in the state. So that would be the more logical choice to put on versus the finance. And then, let's see, I'm going to set up the removal special line from the Treasury. And this subsidy report to the Commissioner of Deed about and the impact on the subsidy on reducing consumer costs and medical. Many of the members here that have been around for a while understand the numbers of reports that we get. The university is not and I'll bring that, I'll actually just read it. The comments that the recipients of this subsidy could report to the Commissioner of Deed each year about the projected and actual impact of the subsidy on reducing consumer costs of drugs, medical devices, and or other bioengineered products. This is a committee made up of half of it by veteran legislators. And the question I would ask is how many of you have read the reports that sent to us? I'm trying to get the university to put forth more jobs. Yesterday we heard from MGI Pharma, the company that started 30 years ago or thereabouts and now has 250 jobs in the state. I'm not so much interested in getting one more report, rather lengthy, as I am in how they're going to put this research to good use. So I ask that particular report be taken out.
Okay.
And if there's any other questions, Mr. Representative Beard, as to why, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Madam Chair, not this time. I'm looking forward to the presentation by our friends from the university.
As are we all. So perhaps Representative Mahoney, you could introduce your guests and move forward.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hawes. I'm not sure, but I...
Representative Hawes.
Thank you. Just do a foundation stone for me. Help me with my memory. Last year, did we not have a set-aside dollars for future projects, a large set-aside at the University of Minnesota, their bonding projects plus? Another established a bank, and I do believe that passed, did it not? It did not pass.
I will pass that question off to the university because I'm not entirely sure, bank or whatever.
Representative Haas, Chair Norton, last year we introduced this bill and had very extensive hearings in the House and Senate, and I believe the bill actually passed the Senate. By a very wide margin, but it did not pass the House, and so this authority did not actually get set up. Now, at the same time, that was a normal bonding year, and so the university's bonding request was approved, and one of the buildings that was proposed as a part of the authority was incorporated into the bonding bill, mostly on the Senate side, as I recall, in the conference committee that got resolved. So the original bill proposed the construction of five buildings over roughly a 10-year period. This modified bill proposes four over roughly an 8 to 10-year period. So that's the main change that occurred. But the bill was not actually passed, and the authorization didn't occur last year, and we're bringing it back again this year. It had very good hearings, and I think it had enjoyed a lot of support. We hope the level of support is still there this year as we talk about the bill today and as we go forward in this session, but it was not approved.
Hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Do you want me to begin, Representative Mahoney? Well, first of all, I want to thank Representative Mahoney and the committee for giving us this opportunity. Let me begin by just making a few introductions. To my left is Cynthia Scott, who's in the Office of State Relations, Government Relations at the University of Minnesota, and she's going to keep us on track and make sure that the right script is in front of us as we go forward. And to my right is Vice President Richard Fitzenreiter, who keeps track of the money at the University of Minnesota and can explain how this bonding authority works in financial terms or how it would work. And I will also be joined in the presentation by Senior Vice President Sarah, who is the head of the Academic Health Center at the University of Minnesota, a person I think many of you know well. I'd also like to acknowledge the presence of Regent Stephen Hunter, a member of our Board of Regents, and thank him for joining us here this morning as well. Would you like me to begin?
Please.
Okay, good. Well, first of all, it's great to be back to talk about this idea. I happen to believe it's one of the most creative, innovative ideas related to the future of biomedical research and all that it means for the future of our economy and quality of life in Minnesota, and I'll elaborate on why I feel so positively about this proposal and why I think it's so critically important to our future. I was struck last year. Last year, we proposed this idea, and we're not even certain we were going to get much of a hearing in the House and Senate because it was proposed kind of late in the in calendar 2005. And even in the waning hours when the legislature was about to adjourn and people were trying to put all the bills together, and in a couple of cases I was sitting in the House and Senate galleries, I was struck by how it captivated the imagination of a lot of the representatives and senators, and what kind of interest it drew, because basically this is all about the prevention of disease, the curing of disease, the promotion of human health, the creation of a lot of energy in Minnesota's economy and quality of life. And we'll try to make the case again for the Biomedical Sciences Facilities Authority. But I just want to say that we believe that it's an absolutely indispensable part of keeping the university as one of the vibrant and most important research universities in the country, and I would argue increasingly in the world. And it's going to be a critical part of maintaining Minnesota's and major sectors of Minnesota's economy and quality of life. I think you regularly read the papers and discover that some companies relocate here because of Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota, one very recently from Denmark. I had a conversation with Vice President Sarah yesterday about another major venture. It's all because of the collection of very talented people who are doing this cutting-edge work that I think are going to create the discoveries to truly change the world. So I'd like to spend a little time talking about why I think this is important. Then I'll segue to Fitz, who will talk about the structure of the Biomedical Sciences Authority, how it's financed, and so forth. This first slide, I give you a few sort of thoughts or a few ideas about why this is critical to Minnesota. Why should we even care about it, you know? And there are two really major conclusions here that I think are really important to appreciate. One is that Minnesota is not some backwater state in this area. We're actually a world leader when it comes to biomedical research and biomedical sciences. And the University of Minnesota is a strong national and international leader in this area as well. And why do I say that? There are over 500 biomedical and medically related businesses in Minnesota alone today, and they employ 250,000 people. And in the last few years, this sector of Minnesota's economy, the job growth has been about 30%. And it's probably led every other sector of Minnesota's economy in terms of job growth. And I think this gets back to the point that Representative Mahoney made so well a few moments ago. We're a leader, obviously, in the medical device industry, and much of that industry was originated through university-related research. And many of you know those great stories. World-class firms like Medtronic and now Boston and Guidant, St. Jude's, many others that we can mention. 3M is a major player in this area. You mentioned MGI Pharma. I have a special feeling for MGI Pharma. One of my friends said to me, who was close to the development of this company, you really ought to buy some of this stock. I did. And I did the usual thing. I bought it, and I held it for 3 years, and it didn't move very much, and I sold it at about 12, and it went up 50 about a year later. So you do not want to get any investment advice from me. My philosophy is buy high and sell low. But anyway, that just gives you an example. This company started with a set of people that had a strong relationship to the University of Minnesota, and it's now really pushing the boundaries of cancer treatment and cancer drugs. So anyway, this is a really good story. And the job growth is about 30 to 32% in the last 10 years in Minnesota compared to about 10% in national terms. So you can get a sense for why this is such a vibrant part of the economy. Now, the University of Minnesota is truly a world leader in this area, in the biomedical sciences. But I'd be less than candid and honest with you today if I didn't say I think we need to be much better. And there's a real commitment in our biennial budget, our program budget that's before the legislature this year, to make deep investments in this area as we have over the past roughly 10 years. We've invested about $500 million, thanks to the support of the state and the legislature and private donors and private industry, in this sector in the past 10 years. Much of it has been capital investment. For example, the Molecular Cellular Biology Building was in, I believe, the 1997-98 capital bill that was approved by the House Senate and signed by the governor. 98% of all the research, funded research, externally funded research, and that comes to roughly $600 million in awards this year alone at the University of Minnesota. 98% of that kind of research in institutions of higher education is done at the University of Minnesota, creating literally thousands of jobs, not just in the university, but outside in the private economy. There are some estimates, economists estimate, that for every $1 million you receive in terms of federal grants and awards, you generate anywhere from 30 to 40 jobs in the private economy. It has that kind of ripple effect. And I always argue that this is a big, very, very important part of Minnesota's positive balance of payments, and we need to think of it that way. So that's just by way of backdrop why we think this is so important. We lead in a number of other areas, fourth in the transfer of technology among the top 15 universities in the country. We're about fourth or fifth in royalties derived from products and inventions at the University of Minnesota. For example, the world's leading AIDS treatment drug was developed at the University of Minnesota. And all of that money that comes in through royalties, and royalties can go up and down, you know, it's hard to control, you can't manage that in the way you manage a lot of other things. But all of that money goes right back into investing in the core research infrastructure of the University of Minnesota. So why do we need to even think about this, and why is it important to take a long-range view as opposed to just a year-to-year view? I think that's the critical thing we have to grapple with here today. First of all, this is all about strengthening the competitive position of the university and the competitive position of our state. And you simply can't compete in today's world, and other states and countries are beginning to grasp this concept, unless you think long-term, unless you are willing to think in terms of 5 to 10 years and think about the future in that way, and think about shaping the future rather than being sort of driven by the events around you. It's all about expanding the people who do this work, that is, bringing and attracting, keeping people who are already good in these areas in Minnesota, and they won't stay if we can't give them the best facilities and laboratories in which to work. But it's also bringing new people, and I think the committee heard about Dr. Gunda Georg from Vice President Mulcahy. Should he talk about her? This is a person in medicinal chemistry who works on drug design that is directly related to the design of new medical devices. Many of the new devices distribute drugs, and increasingly at the site of the disease as opposed to through the bloodstream. That's a much longer story, and I'd be in the deep weeds really fast, and I'd have to call on Dr. Sarah to rescue me. But anyway, that hire and the laboratory that we established took 4 years to accomplish. And it took about $20 million of initial investment in people, in laboratories, in remodeling facilities. In fact, one spin-off aspect of that hire is reflected in the Biomedical Sciences Facilities Authority proposal. So we need that, and we need the technologically sophisticated research space to really house these very talented people. And we need a long-range strategy, because it takes time to get the people, it takes time to put the laboratories in place, it takes time to get the proposals out the door, and to really stay very, very competitive. Now, why worry about this in Minnesota? Why should Minnesota care? Partly we should care because we have a strong research university, and we have a very strong segment of our economy that's dedicated to biomedical research and advances in this area. But there's another reason to worry about this. 20 to 25 states today have major long-term investments in this area. And some of them are very, very dramatic investments. You know about California's $3 billion investment. to the east of us in Wisconsin. They're putting in close to $400 million in building laboratories and facilities over a 6 to 8 year period. On this particular slide, you can see some of our peer institutions, the institutions we compete against for many of the grants and contracts that I talked to you about. And you can see the kind of money, if you just look at the slide, that they're beginning to spend in this particular area. Michigan spending $220 million to build a mega facility in this area, and another facility that I guess opened in 2003. I mentioned Wisconsin, University of Washington. That's only one of many things happening at Washington. San Francisco, who a really vibrant center of biomedical research, is also investing a great deal in this area. And states are creating, I don't think they're creating anything quite as creative as we're bringing to you today, but they are creating a lot of interesting ventures to build the long-term investment strategy in this area. And it's going to be absolutely critical to do that, to keep the University of Minnesota competitive, as I mentioned. Funding levels of NIH funding and NSF funding are relatively flat. I don't think that will stay that way for very long. I don't think the nation's economy can stand disinvestment in R&D. I think we're going to have to grow our investment in research and development to be a world leader in many of the fields that we care about. But anyway, to keep the university competitive and to keep our state competitive, biomedical sciences authority, I believe, is absolutely indispensable to our future. Now, I'd like to segue now to Vice President Pitsenreiter, who will explain the architecture or how this facilities authority is developed and how we propose that the state join in a partnership with the university and the private sector to get it done.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, what we're proposing here to address this issue of our ability to do long-term planning and recruiting and keep Minnesota competitive in this area is to create what we refer to in this bill as the Minnesota Biomedical Sciences Research Facilities Authority. And we create this in statute. It's an entity of the state. It has a 13-member board with legislative members, of course, because of the Constitution. They can't be voting members, but they are members appointed by the governor, et cetera. We have been asked along the way, well, why do we need this authority? Can't we just give you the money? Why do we have to create an authority? Why don't we just give you the money and go do it? The bill was designed not to give the university we'd like a blank check, sure, but we realized that this authority is unique, this request is unique, in that we feel, and the authority is charged with, in several sections of the bill, with specific duties to require the university on a set schedule to come back to that authority for approval of each building over a period of time. So this bill is not designed to give the university $279 million. There is a very important accountability feature in the bill that does require us to meet certain criteria and to come back and report how we did on those criteria, and then ask the authority for another building. So there is very important accountability features of the proposal. With respect to questions earlier about what's changed from the Delete Everything Amendment, the Author's Amendment, in working this bill with the Department of Finance, the Commissioner, Peter Sausen, their bond counsel, they made several suggestions that we incorporated into the Delete Everything Amendment. The change, for example, from the Commissioner of Finance to the Commissioner of the Department of Economic Development. The Commissioner of the Department of Economic Development in the original bill was always a member of the authority, but it was the Finance Commissioner in the bill who was responsible for setting up the, sort of doing the administrative and setting up the budget. The finance department said, we would rather have the Commissioner of Deed do that. So that's one switch that was in the bill. Another feature that the Department of Finance wasn't enamored with and really isn't a deal breaker in the bill is the original bill created a separate bond fund in which the proceeds were deposited in, et cetera. And the finance department preferred that we use the existing statutory authority as to how all other general obligation debt is issued and transfers made from the general fund to the debt service fund to pay those bonds. So by and large, the changes to the bill are technical in nature and not substantive, other than that provision about the reporting that the author mentioned earlier. The bill proposes that the state authorize, give this authority the responsibility for providing grants of $279 million in GO debt based on applications that the University of Minnesota makes. The University of Minnesota is responsible to match 10% of that. So this total pool with the $279 million of the state money and the university's contribution is $310 million of projects that will occur. The bonds will be issued just like current debt of the state of Minnesota. It's issued for 20 years. The first debt payment on this, because of the timing of the projects, will have a general fund impact this coming biennium of, based on the fiscal note prepared by the finance department, of about $2.3 million. That then ramps up to a peak debt service on the state of about $26 million in 2017, and then it begins to ramp down to where all these bonds are paid off by 2036. If we could jump to the next slide, this shows the framework of how each one of these authorizations occurs. And in the bill that is before you, there's a provision that relates to that column there of percent authorized. And there's limitations in the bill as to how much and what fiscal year the authority can actually authorize money in the grant to the University of Minnesota. That sets the timing of each of these projects on roughly a two-year plan, approximately. And that's designed, quite frankly, to help give the finance department a schedule of when this debt that the state's going to pay comes due as these grants are applied for and approved by the authority. I will tell you that the authority is not required to give us a grant. It may give us a grant. It is our responsibility in the bill to put in an application. It is the responsibility of the authority to evaluate that application, look at our performance, and authorize a grant. We then, after we're done with that project, have to come back again. And certainly that authority will be looking at, well, how did you do on the last project before they want to give us authority on another one? At this point, I'll step away unless there's specific questions about the mechanics of the bill, because I know Dr. Sarah wants to talk about what's going to go on in these facilities.
I have a couple here. Representative Beard first, and then Representative Haas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me just refresh myself on the witness's name again. Dr. Fitz...
Fitz and Ryder is such a long name that I've kind of turned into Prince and Cher on Just Fitz.
Dr. Just Fitz, okay. I'm trying to get my arms around how this impacts our bonding capacity at the state. You know, we have a self-imposed 3% of total general fund revenue that we sort of try to make our bonding bill work with under. We usually do that in the even numbered year. This $279 million is about a full third of $1 billion, roughly, that we have as a self-imposed cap. Is this going to all be counted at once, do you think, or can you speak to this? Do we need to have finance down here? Or as you roll it out here over the years, are we going to take $16 million out of our cap 1 year and another $43 million the next year and so on and so forth? Do you follow my question?
Representative Byrd, yes, I do follow your question. The purview of this particular committee is more focused on the technology and is it a good idea for the technology. The bonds and the response to whether this affects our bond rating or doesn't, or affects our bond cap or the 3%, mm-hmm. really should be handled in bonding. I don't believe... And I'm sure Fitz could answer that particular question, but I would prefer, as the author of the bill and the chair of the committee, to not get into discussing whether it affects our bonding rate. This is a really a technology. This is really, is it a good idea to make an investment in technology in this particular committee? But if you so insist on having that particular question answered, I certainly ask Fritz to answer it. But again, I would remind you that this is not a finance committee. This is a policy committee.
Representative Baird, I think I'm hearing that, I'll just repeat, from the chair's position, that the concern is that today we want to discuss policy and that this will be referred to a committee that will deal with the specifics with grants and bonding in the future. If you still would like to pursue this, redirect your question.
Well, let me just make one more statement then, because it goes back again to the structure of the committee, and I know we're coming to state government policy here in a moment, or shortly, where we'll talk about the structures of the agencies, but I'm thinking about the setup and the authority of the committee that will be appointed. I think I just heard, just to define, the bonding authority would be invested in them, but still, if they approve a process, it still has to come back to this body for approval in the bonding committee.
That's not
accurate. Well, perhaps we'll let someone sort that out at state government finance and policy, but it's a question mark that I've got. So.
This is going to GovOps at first next hearing, is it not?
That's where I've asked that it be passed to.
Okay.
And yes, this, as I understand it, and it'll be clarified better, I suspect, in government operations. But this is, once it leaves here, once this bill is passed and leaves here, this authorization is in the preview of those 13 members, and it should be clarified more in government operations.
Thank you. I have Representative Haas and then Representative Pepin, and then I believe Representative Thiessen. No?
Thank you. Okay. Representative Baird, I share those same concerns. They're more of a questioning rather than, quivery lift about it. But another situation I feel very uncomfortable with is that we ran for office, and we're the elected body, and all of a sudden we're giving away $300 million worth of authority and bonding to very knowledgeable people and to people I really, really trust, but they didn't door knock with me. And I don't know if I like giving my authority away even to people that I trust. I don't know if that authority can be passed on that easy. Would you like to comment on that?
We are, Madam Chair, we are not giving away our authority. We are actually setting up the authority. We are voting on the ability for the University of Minnesota, in partnership with any other organization that is willing to partnership with them on these buildings. We are going to vote on that. We are going to say we want 5 new buildings, and we will be voting on that. And we aren't issuing the bonds this year or next year. I think there's a schedule, if it's not in the bill, it's in some of the explanation as to when those bonds would be issued. And the authority of the legislature at any time can come back and say, you've done a really bad job with this. We're not happy, and we can take that back. Nothing that we do today precludes a legislature from changing something in the future.
Representative Haas?
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative. Let me just try one more time, because I'm not seeing it properly then. If this were to get approved and go all the way through, the individual projects would not come back to us. The individual projects would go to this authority. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
And why don't you think, Madam Chair?
Representative Potts.
Representative, why don't you think that's giving my right for approving each individual project away?
And perhaps when you answer that, could you give an example? Is this type of authority granted by the legislature in other instances? This, I assume, is not something new.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is a, I'm trying to think of the, there is a, one place where there is a type of this. But no, this is a fairly new avenue to go down.
Okay.
And here is really the problem that is this bill is trying to address. University buildings, as we try to build them at the campus, can take 6-8 years to get through the process at this building and the building across the street. As we try to bring forth research facilities, to bring in the scientists, to recruit the faculty, you can't go recruit the faculty and say, well, in 8 years we want you to come. And you can't come to the Capitol and say, we're going to build a building, and if we build it, then we're going to go out and find somebody. We have to find a median that allows the university to go recruit top quality people to come and do their research, do their studies, teach at the university, and impart the knowledge and invest in the state of Minnesota. And in order to do that, we need to have a facility for that researcher to come to. And that's what this bill is trying to get to. It does keep controls on the university at some level. As I said, we have the ability to go back and take this money back. There's nothing that says 2 years from now, you know, you've not done your job and we're going to take this back. But it does give them the authorization if they continue to do a good job. We have 4 members, past members and current members. We can talk to them. We can ask them to come in and hold hearings or informally in the hall. Say, how is that authority doing? And if they aren't doing a good job, I would be the first one to join with anyone on this committee to say, we need to have that hearing. We need to talk about this. We need to figure out why it's not working. In the end, we're trying to bring in 1,000 new scientists to the state of Minnesota. And this is what this bill attempts to do. I don't know if I've answered your question or not, but...
You've explained, Madam Chair, you've explained yourself very well. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mahoney and both of you from the U, you know, obviously the U is such a wonderful asset to our state, and I think... Every one of us here appreciates and, you know, respects all the research that you do, and you know, we'd be lost without the University of Minnesota. But having said that, I too, to follow on to some of the comments from Representative Haas, I'm concerned about the bonding authority. And, you know, we do have a capital investment process that everyone has to go through, and I think, Madam Chair, when you asked if this was new, this is very new. This is very precedent-setting, and I'm worried about the precedent of other, you know, there are many worthwhile projects that would avert the bonding process. And in such a, this isn't just a small potatoes type of $5 million thing. This is huge. This is a full third of what our enormous recent bonding bills is. And so I'm very supportive of the U and very supportive of the biomedical science industry and would love to have this research facility. I'm concerned about the process and not going through the proper process. And I also do have a question about the state share of it. This is 90% of the cost, but I believe most of the cost of the U, most of the time the state would pick up maybe 2/3 and the university would pick up 1/3. And I'm wondering what the decision was behind that.
Madam Chair, members, you're absolutely correct. The traditional approach initiated by the Senate back in 1992, it was a Senate position. I was actually the fiscal staff director in the House then, and we caved to the Senate. And they started the 2/3, 1/3 provision in higher education. I can tell you that on research buildings, they are expensive to maintain. They are the most expensive. In fact, many of them, anywhere from 40% to 60% of the building cost is mechanical because of all the standards on air handling. You know, you gotta clean it. It's just an enormously expensive. The buildings themselves, do not cash flow by themselves. And our attempt here is to lessen that burden on the university by going to a 90-10 instead of a two-thirds, one-third share. In the bill, we are required to pay for all of the operating costs of the facility. That's in the bill. The normal day-to-day expenses of that building, and we just felt that we'd like to make the case for a 90-10 share on research buildings. We're not here saying change the two-thirds, one-third on our other academic buildings. It is just the expense of these research buildings and the burden it places on the university's budget.
Could I add just a quick footnote to Chair Norton and Representative Pepin? There are other extraordinary costs that the university bears under this plan. First of all, equipment, much of the expensive equipment going into these laboratories would have, the cost would have to be raised by the University of Minnesota. Obviously, the hiring strategy, what it takes to pay people, we would have to go through a normal legislative process if we were asking for your help, as we are this year, for targeted investments in particular areas. But we'd be responsible, for example, with Professor Georg. I mean, that was our responsibility to figure out how to get that done and figure out how to put the funding strategy through public, private, and internal resources to make it happen. So when you fully cost this out, and you think about the human capital part, and you think about the equipment laboratory costs, the cost on the university side of the ledger is much more substantial than 10% of the total cost. I mean, when you fully load all the costs, the university is picking up an awful lot of that. And I would say just that I know we don't want to get into the deep weeds on the province of another committee, but governments regularly create authorities to do long-term planning, long-term capital development. Interstate Highway Bill is a bill like that. That was established during President Eisenhower's administration, and port authorities are developed to do long-range capital investments. And what we're really saying here is that the Housing Finance Agency in Minnesota is in some ways similar to what we're talking about, where the state said we need to be invested for the long term in the development and renewal of our housing stock. And developed an authority and an agency to do that. Now, it operates in different ways, perhaps, than this one, but these are sort of similar concepts where the public decides that there's a compelling state interest here and a compelling economic interest that takes a long-range strategy. The average bonding bill has approached $1 billion. The last one was $1 billion. The average project in that bill was under $5 million. You can't develop a successful strategy in this area with every two-year cycle. This has to be kind of we think it has to be a longer range view. So the inevitable question is, why don't you just come back in your bonding bill and make an $80 million building your priority every 2 years? Because that would take about 70-80% of all the future bonding bills, as far as the eye could see, at least in the next 10 to 15 years, leaving out all other aspects of the university's research and education and outreach mission throughout the state of Minnesota. And this is, I guess the argument here is, this is a really extraordinary time, and an extraordinary time to say to ourselves that what we're setting out to do here does take a long-range view, and it takes this kind of a strategy or something similar to get it done. And the normal bonding cycle often takes 4 to 6 years to get one of these buildings passed. And then you have all the uncertainty that goes with that. And I think, as Representative Mahoney is saying, with such a high level of uncertainty and the hyper-competitive pressures that we see around the country, I think we'd be destined to sort of fall further and further behind in this race that I think is absolutely essential to Minnesota's future. We're going to all have to decide whether these arguments are compelling and whether it makes sense to do this.
Thank you for that response. And Dr. Sarah wants to speak, but I also have questions from Representative Thiessen, Representative Winkler, and Representative Bunn, and we still have not finished the presentation. So
we can keep our answers a little bit short.
Can I respond to this last question?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I defer to you
first. I just want to compliment President Brunick's statement by drawing upon the testimony that this committee has heard over the last 2 weeks, which is all about the future of the biosciences in the state of Minnesota. And I would summarize it this way. Do you want to be a flyover state when it comes to biosciences and give away the richness we've got today to the East Coast and the West Coast of the United States? In my view, that is what is at stake. And that is the long-range view that President Brunich is talking about. I just need to make that statement to you. You've heard from the BioBusiness Alliance, from Life Science Alley. You heard from Vice President Mulcahy and I. You're going to hear about the success of the University Mayo Partnership. That's all being certain that what happened 30 years ago that made us the envy of the world in the medical device industry is the same for the people that are living here 30 years from now. And it cannot be done without long-range planning and investment. And throughout all of that, you maintain the control over what happens by saying yay or nay to what we ask for. So what that gets me to is the important thing is what's in these buildings, not the bricks and mortar. That's my answer to the question. I can explain more about what's in them after the questions are answered.
Okay, Representative Thiessen and Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And they've said exactly what I would have said in response, as part of the comments here as well. I mean, we do run every 2 years, and in this situation, that's part of the problem, in my view. We do need to plan for long term. And all the things they said, I would absolutely agree with. The question I would have, kind of getting back to the jurisdiction of this committee a little bit, is you see all these competitors out there in the other states who are investing a lot of money in biosciences. And I know we have a historical spot in biosciences, but everybody's getting into this space. You know, is this is the competition, does it make us a space? Maybe we should be looking somewhere else, perhaps. And I'd just like to get your comment on that.
I'll just say, Chair Harkin, Representative Thiessen, to say something very quickly, and Vice President Sarah is much better at answering this. But I think we are in an enviable competitive position now. And so most investments really make sense to build on strength and comparative advantage. And here we've got something where we're building on strength, and we're building on the comparative advantage of the University of Minnesota and the strength and comparative advantages of our state. And in rethinking, as we've been doing the last few years, the long-range future of the university, we are increasingly trying to map what we think are our strengths and comparative advantages to those strengths and comparative advantages of our state. We think that's the best way to really not only focus the university, but also focus the long-term strategy for how the university connects to state needs. So if we were starting from scratch, I think there are a lot of states that believe if they throw a lot of money at the wall and they build a lot of buildings, for example, there are a lot of states that are saying, let's spend $300 million on buildings and we are going to catch up and be a world leader in the biomedical science. But that's simply not going to happen because it's a human capital-driven enterprise. And if you don't start with enough of a foundation, I don't think you can compete. I think you have to probably spend billions to compete. If you don't have it, if you don't have any kind of momentum going, it's an enormously expensive proposition. But there are a number of states that I guess we would regard as being behind the curve. They're spending a lot of money, and I think they're going to wake up 5 to 10 years from now. We're not in that kind of position. This is one of the most vibrant parts of Minnesota's economy, one of the most vibrant parts of the University of Minnesota. Up to the legislature and the governor. Several governors going back probably 10 to 15 years, we've systematically made some very deep investments in this area. And so we start with a really good foundation. But if I were to look you in the eye and say we're sort of mediocre as a state in this area,
you need to spend $500 million, I'd be selling you a bill of goods, to be honest with you. I just don't think we could pull it off. But we don't start there. We start from a position of strength and comparative advantage.
Representative Winkler. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd actually just like to congratulate you on a very innovative approach to this, and I think it's that kind of thinking that has made us a leader and put us in that position in the first place. My question is, I read an article recently in the Star Tribune talking about research dollars coming to Minnesota leveling off, and I understand that your point here is that you need to build the space to attract the faculty, which will bring in the research dollars. What other strategies are you pursuing, innovative strategies, to bring in more research dollars besides this building and bonding authority?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, that's a very excellent question. And we're doing a lot of things. Vice President Mulcahy, when he was been here, I think went through some of them. And I'll list some more from you or for you. One, with the leadership of President Brunix, approved by the board, is a whole plan to promote interdisciplinary and interprofessional interactions. In other words, how do we leverage our strengths? How do we bring together the areas of convergence is how we think about it. How do you take, you heard this discussion of nanobiology, how do you take the engineering, marry it with the medicine, and create the new devices. We're very strong at that, and we've already got a good track record in that. Another piece of information that Vice President Mulcahy talked about is we make investments in these kind of interdisciplinary programs. We've got an 80% return on investment for 3 years, actually 100%. We can do this kind of thing. The third thing we do is we recruit top-shelf faculty. They're the people that make this work. And we can recruit the faculty we go after over 90% of the time. We put in programs to promote scholarship, to promote graduate student scholarships, because that's where the work gets done. And it just keeps going on down the list. There's a whole coordinated university-wide effort to recruit and retain. The point I'm trying to drive to with this is this. It's a statement Will Rogers said. I don't know if I should do this. Usually President Brunix makes Will Rogers statements, but this was a good one. Even if you're on the right track, you'll get run over if you just sit there. And that's what this discussion is really about. We're really good in the biosciences, whether it's grains, whether it's ag, whether it's health, but our neighbors are out investing us. And you've made investments in us over the years, but right now, if we don't get the investment to grow, increase our faculty capacity, and have the facilities for them to work in, we'll get run over by the train because we're just sitting here.
Thank you.
Actually, if I could, I hate to cut off an esteemed member of the academia like these two. For a guy that discussed here with the community college, it's always kind of fun to sit here. That's why I've had the photographer taking a lot of pictures. So, the members are free to are free to answer or ask any questions they need to, but we have another bill yet today, and I would, as the author and as the chair of the committee, I would hope that you would try to stay within the preview of is this a good policy to pursue looking at the research that the U will do.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney, and I am watching the clock, so we'll see that.
This is your bill.
We'll see that my bill gets heard. Thank you. I have Representative Bunn, and then we'll move on to Representative Byrne.
Thank you. A general comment, I think, based on the testimony of the last 2 weeks and the presentation today, and also
my own background in higher education and the importance of being able to retain and attract faculty and what it takes to do that. I understand the importance of establishing a unique type of institution like this to be able to respond to the market forces in this particular situation. I do have a question, though. One, I want to ask a clarifying question and then a second question. In on line 7.4 in section 7, when it mentions recipients of the subsidy, the recipient in this case, since the regents are going to the authority to ask for funding for the bonding for a particular building, who is the recipient being referred to in this case?
Could you read the citation again?
Oh, sorry. Okay. Well, I am talking about the original because I want to ask about this section in the original bill.
But we have to.
Okay. Here's my question then, because it may be lead to the issue of whether they're. Well, maybe I'm out of order not knowing my process here once that bill's passed. I just wanted to know the issue of, accountability is a big issue these days, that Representative Mahoney dropped out the section on, or suggested that the section was taken out on the reporting. Is that out of order then to talk about it at all?
Oh. Representative Bond, being new myself, I'm going to grant you that.
Okay.
Anyway, go ahead.
Because you could put forward another amendment, possibly. That's why I raise it. Okay. On the issue of reporting, I think generally since I had understood one of the main arguments for doing the 90 versus 10% was the tremendous economic benefits from this type of initiative of the state, you then explained some other reasons for arguing for 90 versus 10, just based on the cost associated with research-type facilities versus general academic facilities. In the original wording, in terms of, I'm concerned that given those arguments for justifying the 90 versus 10 and are wanting to push this effort forward and get a majority of support for it eventually, whether we would need to have some kind of reporting accountability. Having taken a look at the original wording, though, particularly as an economist familiar with econometrics and things, when I look at what's asked for in the original reporting, the type of studies required to actually produce those kinds of reports with any valid numbers at all would be extremely complex studies. So I do think the original wording was an undoable task. You could not separate out effects of your facilities on those products and prices and jobs from other people's without econometric studies of a very complex nature. And so I just raised the question. I'm not sure what the solution would be here in terms of asking for a reporting of some kind, but I just raised the question to put it before the committee. And again, it's maybe something that Governor Ops could take up in the future in terms of having some sort of reporting, but not the type that was originally mentioned in the bill before it was amended. So I just wanted to put that on the table. Thank you,
Representative Button. Representative Mahoney, we've had several requests now for some other level of accountability, and the suggestion was made to send that to Government Ops as a suggestion. Is that appropriate?
This has got a long way to go before it gets to the House floor. And, I mean, the university can say all it wants about the cost of a building or cash flow or anything else. The reason I believe the 90% 10% is I believe your paying customers are students, and if you don't have the money, you have to raise tuition? Okay.
We could not. I feel it would be very unacceptable to tap tuition revenues to pay off buildings that were exclusively dedicated or primarily dedicated to research, and that is 25% of the university budget right now. If it's a regular academic building where students are taught, so the portion, I mean, in student universities, so that some of those revenues pay are part of the obligation, I think that Representative Mahoney is saying. I don't think there's any lack of accountability in this model, because we have to report to multiple committees of the legislature every year on how well we're doing in so many areas. We file with the legislature, with the governor's office, with the Board of Regents, a report on all the productivity measures of the university. They number about 80, and they're very carefully benchmarked on a longitudinal basis. But even in coming back to the authority and then making the reports to the appropriate legislative committees, we'd have to say, how well are we doing with this investment? Is it really returning the kind of expected benefits to the state of Minnesota that we anticipated? And as Representative Mahoney is saying, if you didn't have answers, you'd say, well, we've spent You know, we've spent a third of this authorization, but we really think we need, as a state, to move our money someplace else. I mean, that is completely within the province of the legislation to do with this authority or the Housing Finance Agency or any other entity of government. So I can assure you that if you want us to work with you on crafting language for related to reporting and accountability and how that would work, we would be extraordinarily responsive. We think that's our responsibility, and quite frankly, I wouldn't ask anyone to appropriate this level of money if we weren't prepared to be accountable. We have to.
I appreciate that. I have Representative Mahoney.
No, go right ahead.
Okay, two more questions that I've seen thus far. Excuse me. Representative Burns and then Representative Root. And Representative Kappen is waiting for a follow-up. I apologize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have three questions. They're all short. One is the definition of biomedical science and biomedical technology. There's a lot there. Is it just the College of Biological Science? Is it just the Department of Genetics, Cell Biology, and Development? Is it just the Department of Biochemistry, Molecular Biology, and Biophysics? Is it the Stem Cell Institute? What does that cover?
Madam Chair, Representative Burns, it's a good question. First, bioscience versus biotechnology. We have standardized those definitions through the Biobusiness Alliance. So science is the discovery of the knowledge. Biotechnology is the company that produces the product.
Okay.
It's the actual product. So for us, biosciences in this university is broad and deep with areas of major excellence. We're looking at agriculture and grain industry in Minnesota. So I'm going to show you some horizontal alignment here in answering your question. Whether you're talking about agricultural, again, and biofuels development, whether you're talking about engineering and industrial applications of chip technology that goes into medical devices, whether you're talking about health sciences that applies those discoveries in cancers, in heart disease, it's that piece of the university that this investment is in.
Well, and I guess my question was more geared toward, I don't know if it benefits if it's too broad, if it includes every department possibly related, no. Because we don't get to, I think what the university wants to do is really drive.
Okay. Let me answer that.
So I assume you at the university have some pretty defined definitions that will allow these buildings to be used for exactly what you want it to be used for.
Madam Chair, Representative Burns, that's exactly correct. We've identified them. We've linked the basic science with the applied science. And that's where we do the recruiting. That's where our resources go. And that's where the outcomes will come from. And those are in prevention and treatment of disease, heart attacks, strokes, Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, and that's quite well defined.
Okay. My second question is
related. Pick up the pace just a little bit.
Sure. Is related. It's line 424, and it talks about the $75 million grant receipt requirement for a partner. Who qualifies for that, and what does that mean?
Madam Chair, Representative Burns.
Yes, sir.
The issue we were addressing here is one of focusing resources for the best and most rapid outcome. It's a quality statement, and I'll just answer it in crossing those two disciplines. If you're going to produce the kind of production we're talking about to compete, it's got to be done in those research institutions that already have the infrastructure in place that can recruit and retain the faculty to do it. So that $75 million requirement is reflective of that, because it's competitive research money, which means it's passed your national and international peer-reviewed process in the competition for the roughly $35 billion that the federal government puts out for that, which is the major funder. What that qualifies, just to answer your question, is the university and the Mayo Clinic. And you're going to hear about the university-Mayo partnership, but that was the underlying rationale.
Okay. And my last question is...
If I might add something here, just so everyone knows, the short answer to his question would have been the Mayo Clinic.
Sure.
But we've got 10 minutes, and I'm certainly hoping that we can vote on this bill yet today. I hope.
And the chair has learned a lesson that I should have asked the speakers before they started their slideshow whether they wanted questions during or at the end. I think we're already down the road. Representative Byrd, your final question.
Yeah, my last one. You talked about five buildings. I didn't see the number five in there. Is that just determined by $310 million?
Madam Chair, members, the goal here in the original bill was 750,000 square feet of biomedical sciences facilities. We did one last session in the bonding bill. There is 600,000 left. We parsed that really into these five projects. You can think about them as buildings, or you can think about them as a renovation of a building. But the goal, remaining goal, is 600,000 square feet.
And then when the money's gone, there's no more buildings until the legislature chooses to reauthorize.
That's exactly right.
Thank you.
How about if we let Representative Pepin do her follow-up, because she's been very patient with me, and then we'll get to Representative.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a couple follow-ups, but most of those questions have been addressed by other members. We're all, you know, I guess bright minds think alike. But I guess my comment, and one of the questions I was going towards, Representative Bunn already addressed with the reporting, and I just wanted to comment on that because I'm sure you're all aware of the auditor's report that came out talking about the grants and how there's so many different, you know, there's so many different things going on. Not a lot of regulation on those grants, talking about perhaps a new authority. And so that's one of the reasons that I feel really strongly that we do have some type of accountability, and I am on state government, so I won't offer an amendment now because it seems like, you know, people think this is maybe a little much, but I would like to either see you, Representative Mahoney, address that reporting by the time it gets to state government, or I would likely introduce one myself at that point because I do think that you know, this is a lot of money, so I think that should just be a minimal requirement.
I'm certainly willing to work with anyone on this bill. As I say, it's got a long way to go. I can quickly off the top of my head come up with four more committees that it's got to go to so before it gets to the floor. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of people I'll be working with between now and then.
It's only 33 committees.
36, I thought.
More than 10% of them.
Thank you for that suggestion. I think that's an excellent one. Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. and I'll be quick. And this is not a finance committee, I understand it, but when the comment came up that we don't want to put this on sort of on the backs of the students, I thought, is it not true that actually, fortunately, the University of Minnesota has really, their fundraising has exceeded expectations in the past? And I'm just wondering, and believe me, I am totally in support of the University of Minnesota. All five of us in our family attended the University of Minnesota. Our son graduated from medical school there, so I'm totally with you, but we do have to keep this accountable, and I'm just wondering, are there any other fundraising efforts in place for this besides coming to the legislature for 90%?
Karen Arkin, Representative Ruth, good question. We are probably one of the better universities in the country at raising private dollars. About 98 cents of every one of those dollars we raise is dedicated, and it's not fungible, and it's sort of dedicated to a particular scholarship or a particular professorship, or in some cases we can raise money for capital projects like building. Very, very difficult to raise money for capital projects, and it's probably a reflection of the human spirit, you know. When I write a check, when I write a check to a charity, I want to write it to something that's going to have a direct impact on the lives of people, like a scholarship to students. And so if you take all the different things that we raise money, you know, to support at the University of Minnesota, this is the hardest sell of all, is bricks and mortar and equipment and laboratories. And I think it's because the general public believes that this is such an important public investment, if they view it as really part of the core infrastructure of public investment, that they're more inclined to give directly to people, the professor who does the research or the student who's trying to get the degree. But some of our 10% would be raised privately. But it's very, very difficult. We could not capitalize it through private fundraising. And we are also out there doing fundraising for a children's hospital and a physician's clinic and these clinical operations that we have to provide as a part of the medical school and related programs. It is kind of a complex sort of web of issues. I thought Representative Burns asked a really important question. What are the other, or no, it's Representative Winkler, I think. What are the other things you are doing? What are the other strategies here? And private fundraising has to be one of them. Obviously, the expansion of public-private partnerships has to be in the center of the radar. It can't be just a federal strategy. I believe the federal government is going to move back to expanding research and development. Otherwise, we're going to see the United States decline in real terms, in terms of its economy around the world. So we have to use a lot of these strategies, but I think if a state like Minnesota wants to stay competitive, I think you'd have to make these basic core infrastructure investments the same way you have to put in the highway system and the bridges and the other things that are necessary to maintain the core infrastructure of your economy.
Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for those that are looking for the reporting, you should probably go on the delete all amendment on 4.4. Mm-hmm. The authority must report to the legislature by July 1st of each odd-numbered year on implementation of projects since the last report on plans of the upcoming year. And I just want to know, I want you to know that I'm trying to keep this. You know, I don't want to bring the finance into this particular committee because I've seen what happens in policy committees when you try to do that. But I am trying to keep some control on the university. I think it's important. The other that was eliminated from the earlier one was a report on the medical products. And as you heard yesterday, sometimes the medical product can be 10 or 12 years out. So, you know, and in I will answer any questions. I'm sure we're going to get a chance to meet over the next couple of months, and I will make a point to sit down with Representative Pepin and anyone else to explain it. But unless there's any other questions, I'd like to renew my motion. I don't know if the chair has any on the list up there.
No, I don't, and we can certainly renew the motion. I do want to apologize for not having gotten through the slide presentation of our speakers, but we all have the slides in front of us.
Well, I want you to know that the chair of the committee has learned something today, and I will do a better job of scheduling people to come in the second half of the committee hearing.
Okay.
I just want to say that the questions were really outstanding questions, and they anticipated a lot of what was going to be in the presentation. I looked
at
my notes, and you covered basically all the ground. And the only disappointment I have is that Frank Serra stole my final quote.
we'll try to offer you another opportunity later this year.
All the main points.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, I know we're about to vote on this, so just as the lead Republican in this committee, I just want to make a couple summing comments, at least as I've sat and listened to this and finally kind of come around to the way the flow is going here. I think there have been some lessons learned, and the chair and I will talk about those over a cup of coffee here a little later today. But part of the slideshow we didn't get to kind of, I think, would have been, just if I was putting together the slideshow, probably what it would have led with, which gets to the 30,000-foot view of why this is important, members. We're trying to look at the economic and intellectual engine of our state and putting it in some sort of a little more stable footing when it comes to recruiting high-powered folks here that do stuff that most of us don't do. I mean, I can sell stuff, but somebody else has to dream it up. We're looking at recruiting the people who dream these things up and talk about what's possible. I think the bill does have to have some work. I like Representative Bunn, Representative Pepin's ideas about some little strengthening of the reporting language. That can happen in a further stop. And just a comment on the not talking about fiscal policy here. the glaring feature of this bill is $279 million in funding. It's kind of hard to ignore that and look around that to get at the stuff at the end of the presentation. So I'm sure the chair will forgive us for asking obvious questions about gobs of money that aren't going to go through normal channels. However, getting to the end of the presentation makes the case for why this may be a thoughtful, reasonable idea when it gives the university tools to put the state ahead on good footing for recruiting things that our kids and grandkids are going to be employed and engaged in. So, members, I guess I would ask you to support this as we pass it along to state gov, and I'm glad that the good folks there are going to get a chance to tighten things up a little bit. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I do have a request from the audience. Someone has come and would like to make about a 30-second statement.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Phil Griffin. I represent Life Science Alley. When we were before you last week, we talked about the 4 points that we think are important this session for you to remember: education, research, do no harm, economic development. This is number two. Madam Chair, members, we would urge you to support this. I was on the agenda, and I have a great speech that I'd love to give you, but I'll put it on a podcast, and you can log in.
And I think you did that in 30 seconds. Thank you very much. We appreciate your support of the file. If there's no further discussion, I think Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House File 132 be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the Committee on Governmental Operations, Reform, Technology, and Elections. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Pepin. Just going to make my life.
Thank you. And I'm just going to explain myself. I'm actually going to vote against the bill, but it's not because I don't think the university does great things. It's because of the process and the precedent of a new authority that I think the bill needs to slow down a little bit, and because of the huge price tag. So it's not that I think I'm very pro bioscience and pro research and development. I think I've shown that in my past years on this committee, but I just wanted to let everyone know why I'm planning to vote against the bill right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Pepin. Any other questions? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
So moved. The motion prevails. House File 132 is recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Governmental Operations, Reform, Technology, and Elections.
Members, we have, I'm going to apologize from the committee to the people from Rochester. I again have learned a little bit about scheduling here. We will reschedule that, and I'm sure we can catch up with you after the committee here. I want to thank all the members, the witnesses from the university, and unless there's any other business in front of the committee, seeing none, I will adjourn the committee.